Now, there are other things that don't have to be disclosed on the ingredient pound that you should know about. There are what we call release agents. Now, release agents, many of you are very proficient in the kitchen, and I'm sure your culinary skills are very keen. Whenever you fry an egg, okay, what will you do? Okay, you'll spray the frying pan, okay, with a PAM. That PAM is called a release agent. Why? Because what it does is it makes the egg not stick to the pan. When companies make products also, many times they have what they call band oil or divider oil also. Now, the divider oil is usually used in the baking industry. Sometimes you'll have a big glob of dough that has to be cut and shaped to size. And everything is done with great precision. Everything has to weigh just the right amount. And there are also weights at the end that they have scanners to weight all the product. So that to make sure that you, when you get your loaf of bread in the supermarket, your bread is not bigger than your friend's for the same loaf of bread. Why should you be paying more than your friend? And everything's done with great precision. And the way they cut the dough in this instance is what they use an oil to cut the dough and to make each piece of dough the exact amount. And this dough is called, and this oil is called divider oil. Or when they have cookies run on what they call a conveyor. Or you'll put your cookies in the oven and you'll put it either on parchment paper, okay? Or you'll spray the pan. Sometimes you'll spray, or you'll smear it with margarine, okay? So that the cookie does not stick to the pan. They call this band oil. These are all what they call release agents. These are items, also ingredients, that are not going into the product per se, but are being used in the production of the product. And these ingredients are certainly coming in direct contact with the products, with those same products. Now, the one thing if you go your shopping and pick up a box of cookies, or go ahead and buy a loaf of bread in the store, you will not see, in most instances, I'm almost sure like 95% instances, you will not see on the ingredient panel divider oil or band oil or any other release agent that may have been used in the production of the cookies, the cakes, the breads, or what have you. That's another thing that you, the consumer, will not know about because it does not have to be disclosed. These are products or ingredients that aid in production. And production aids, quote unquote, these are called production aids, do not have to be disclosed according to the Food and Drug Administration. So again, just by reading the ingredients and saying, well, this is not there and that is not there and all looks kosher, we can't assume. You always have to check. And always check for, always check to make sure that the proper kosher symbol is affixed to the packaging. Now, there are many kosher items. We'll get to parve and dairy as well. You have, for instance, what they call non-dairy creamers. Now, I can tell you, as far as kosher is concerned, our non-dairy is very different than the Food and Drug Administration's non-dairy. In fact, there are non-dairy creamers that are dairy as far as kosher is concerned. And you'll see on many non-dairy creamers, it will have an O-U-D because the D is for dairy. Now, let me ask you the question. How is it possible for something which is called a quote-unquote non-dairy to be labeled as O-U-D, labeled as dairy? And I'm going to explain to you. Again, we have different definitions. According to the Food and Drug Administration, anything which does not have milk can be labeled and called non-dairy. As far as kosher is concerned, well, it can't have any milk nor any milk derivatives. Now, there are many items that may not be milk proper, but may be derivatives of milk. For instance, whey. Whey is a byproduct or a derivative of milk. Or you have what they call casein, or sodium caseinate. This is also a byproduct of milk and a derivative of milk. So if you see this, if you see casein, C-A-S-E-I-N-E, or sodium caseinate, in your ingredient panel, you know the product is dairy. And if it just has OU, call our office immediately, okay? Because it should not be labeled with the OU. It should have a D on it. It should be dairy. And that's why many of these non-dairy creamers, they do have casein or sodium caseinate in their ingredients, which would make them dairy or OUD for kosher, but it's not going to make them dairy for the government. And here again, we have another discrepancy between definitions, between what's, again, a classification for the government and the classification that we have for kosher. Let's move away a little bit from definitions. And I'm going to show you something here that I have. It comes in quite handy. Does everyone see this? Okay, this is an OU, as you all see. However, I can do this with my asparagus can. And the question is, well, does this make this can of asparagus kosher? Well, you're saying it has the OU. And this is something I want you to be alerted to and to be careful about as now an educated consumer. The problem here is we call this a loose label. A loose label is our kosher emblem, which has no modifications, no descriptions whatsoever. As such, anyone can take this and use this to make something what they perceive to be kosher. So if you do see something like this in the course of your shopping, please call our office. This is unauthorized, and we have to know about it immediately. Something that you have to be careful about. And we have this issue arise often? No. But on occasion, okay, we do find companies using loose labels, OUs without any description whatsoever, in order to have their products certified kosher. And we take them to task. In fact, we let them know right from the outset that this is against our policy. Because God forbid, chas v'shalom, okay, you can use this on almost anything, okay, and it can get you into enormous difficulties. So what do we have the companies to do? Well, especially you have a new company that wants to become kosher. Now they come to us and they apply for kosher certification, and they were not kosher for years and years. But everyone wants to jump on the bandwagon right now. So they're becoming kosher. They have years of packaging which has no kosher symbol. So they approach us and they ask us, we want to become kosher and we want to get the kosher symbol on the packaging. No one wants to throw out packaging. In fact, I can let you know that many a times what's inside the jar or what's inside the can costs much less than the jar and can itself. And I have had companies tell me this repeatedly. Rabbi, do you know that for the peas and carrots or the bananas that's going in the jar or going inside the can, we're spending a fraction of the cost than the jar or the can that's holding the peas and carrots or it's holding the bananas. And that's all money for the company. And because of that, no company in their right mind is going to want to throw out packaging just because it doesn't have a kosher emblem on it. So how do we get about that? Do we tell them to print up these labels, okay, and put them on the packages, put them on the film, put them on the wrapping? Do we tell them to do that? No, but we do give them direction. And we let them know that what they can do is they can take these labels and modify it, put a description on the label. They can say that, well, in this instance, it's going to be, the brand is going to be called Stop and Shop. And it's going to be asparagus pears. And then they can have the OU. And that's a way for us to circumvent the problem of them throwing out hundreds and sometimes millions of dollars of packaging, okay, in order to accommodate the kosher certification. And this is a win-win situation for all. So if you do see a label, though, that has a kosher symbol, in this case the OU, and has also a description of the product, and preferably also the brand name of the product, this is something which is acceptable. Okay, but we can't have what we call these generic loose stickers being used randomly and haphazardly. This is very important as far as kosher is concerned. And here I actually have, when we do certify products, we have companies send in their packages before the product is certified. And we're being made privy to the formulas of these products. Sometimes you should know also that what you see on the ingredients, okay, as we said, may not be what's actually going into the product, not in its totality. And we look at the label or the package or the box before we certify the product to make sure, one, that for the most part, ingredient-wise, everything is heading in the right direction. And two, our kosher symbol is not being compromised. If it's a dairy product, the D has to be there, and the D has to be prominent. We actually do have guidelines on how the D is to be portrayed. And the rule of thumb is that, first of all, it should be in close proximity to the circle U, and the D should be the same size as the U inside the circle. Many a times, actually, we've had companies like this and still do. Sometimes you can hardly ever make out the D. The D is so tiny, you almost need a magnifying glass to see that the product has a D on it. And we let them know. We try to take a look at the packaging beforehand, as we said, to make sure that it's being displayed in the proper manner, in the proper fashion. So if you do also see something, if you see a D, for instance, that looks very small and hardly noticeable, also please call it to our attention because we'd like to know about it. And we do follow up with this with our companies to make sure that we do remedy the situations. Also, for your information, has anyone seen the real sign? Like real milk? Well, there are a few items that you should know about that always check the ingredient panel no matter what. Even if an item is registered or is displayed as a PARP item, there are a few certain products that you should know switch back from dairy to PARV. It could go almost either way. One product is margarine. If you see there are margarines that are PARV and there are margarines that are dairy. So even if you see a margarine that's marked OU, there it's good for you to read the ingredients. make sure there's no milk in the ingredient, there's no casein, and there's no whey. Because if there are any of those ingredients in the ingredient panel, then you know the product is dairy. And then it has been mislabeled as PAR, so we should know about it. These things are all checked prior to it hitting the market. On occasion, things can slip through. So for you, as a consumer, it's important to be aware of this. You have margarine as one. You also, we mentioned, mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is another item. It could go swing back from PAR to dairy, because you have mayonnaises that are PAR, and you do have mayonnaise that can be dairy. And again, even if you see, always check. Can't hurt just to briefly peruse the ingredient panel and to see that in fact there are no dairy ingredients in the ingredient legend. Another one is chocolate. Sometimes you feel you're picking up a baking chocolate or a semi-sweet chocolate. Many semi-sweet chocolates also may be dairy. Okay, they may put a small amount of milk in the chocolate. So again, even if it, always check to make sure that there are no dairy ingredients. Don't assume, okay, but become educated. Ask the question, and if you do find something which seems to be a little bit strange and out of order, again, please call us, and we mean to follow up on that. And we do appreciate that fact that you're more educated and also are looking out, because that's our job, to make sure that you know what to look out for, not to assume that something is kosher just because it looks just right, but to do a little bit of investigation in your own right. Yes?
What is the difference between OUP for PARV and OUP for PFAS?
Okay, excellent question. Generally, we do not have a OUP for PARV. The P is really earmarked for Passover, for Pesach. And if it's OUP, it is a Pesach certified product. If they use the P, and now if you find something that is problematic, sometimes I think this may, sometimes you'll come across, let's say, something which has a P, let's say a vegetable blend, frozen vegetables. And in the vegetables, you'll find, carrots, okay, celery, and onions and peas. Now, we don't certify peas for Pesach, because that's kitnios. Okay? So, there again, you can look and see. If you see on the, and they'll put a picture on the front, and there will be peas there. And why should it have the pea? It should not have the pea. Again, that's something that you can look at as a consumer, okay, and ask the question. Become educated. Know that, listen, how can we don't certify peas for Passover? Now, sometimes on the Passover, they write for the Sephardic community. Okay? So that's another thing. But as far as we're concerned, okay, we try to accommodate all walks and to make sure that it's good for everybody. So if you see something like that, that's again something that you could call to our attention. But again, the P stands for Pesach. If they do put PARV, they would either spell the word PARV out, it would say P-A-R-E-R-V-E by the O-U, or there would just be a plain O-U without any description. So sometimes you see the word spelled out. If it's just a P, that means it is certified for Passover, and if it's something which you perceive to be something which may not work for Passover, call it to our attention, because we'd like to hear about it. Yes?
Why is it sometimes that it's written out PARV and sometimes there's just nothing?
Okay. Companies, and we like to impress upon this also, PARV obviously is a very versatile kosher product, because it can be served not only with your milchig meal, but you can serve it with the fleishigs. And the companies know that if they have a product that is PARV, they like to advertise it and publicize it. And they'll spell it out so that consumers should know for sure this is something which you can have with both milchigs and fleishigs, and there's no problem whatsoever. If you have just the OU, some then companies come and say, is it okay for us just to put the OU on? And the answer, if it's a PARV item, the answer is yes. However, if they want to flaunt it a little bit more and advertise it a little bit more, they'll actually write out the PARV so that they'll that you should know as a consumer that this is okay to have even with your Fleishig meal.
It's a marketing thing, basically.
It's a marketing thing. It's absolutely a market. It's absolutely a marketing matter. I'd like to finish with actually something which I have always found very fascinating, and what makes us really proud of the OU organization to be a communal service. And as Rabbi Safran has stated before, years ago, it wasn't as easy as it is today to keep kosher. And sometimes kosher has changed many people's lives. The fact that you have the availability that wasn't around years ago. And there's hardly any area, any place that you can't go today to find really a preponderance of kosher products. You could be here in New York City, okay? You could be out in Hawaii or even on the Fiji Islands. Most of your supermarkets will carry acceptable kosher items. Because on your average supermarket, that's the way it is today. There is that availability. And we are blessed. And really, we feel proud that we serve the bulk of the kosher market. And that we are doing this service for the community. And in response to this, there's a very, very fine Devar Torah that I had seen written in one of our posts on Rabbi Yisrael Belsky Shlita's book. It's called Einei Yisrael on Parshas Bereishis. And he writes about in Parshas Bereishis that we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ascended to the Shemayim to receive the Luchos. Moshe Rabbeinu had ascended to Shemayim to receive the Luchos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the moment Moshe came up to Shemayim, the Malachim, the angels who were there, became very, very unnerved and very nervous. And they asked Hashem, for what reason has mankind ascended to the heavens? And Hashem told the Malachim, he has come to receive the Torah. And this is a Gemara in Shabbos. And the Malachim then became infuriated. And they started to vent their outrage. Well, after all, it says, Mo enosh kisizkerenu ven odom kisifkedenu. So he says, who is man that you should take note of him? And mortal being that he should be remembered? But the yefatichasreu miat ne'elokim. You have made him just a little bit less than God himself by giving him the Torah. What does he have to deserve this great treasure of the Torah? After all, man succumbs to temptation, to his evil inclination. He's not less like us malachim, who are perfect in every which way. So why should we give the Torah to mankind, to human flesh and blood? This was the malachim's question. And it seems like a valid question. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned to Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, you, Moshe, I'm about to give the Torah to you to give to mankind. Answer the Malachim. You can imagine how Moshe felt at that time. Moshe was stunned, shocked. And if he wasn't nervous before, he was even more nervous now. And he started to shake uncontrollably until HaKadosh Baruch Hu consoled him and says, hold on to my kisi akavod, hold on to my throne, and answer the malachim. And Moshe Rabbeinu turned to the malachim. Are we familiar with this Gemara? Somewhat, yes. Moshe turned to the malachim, and Moshe said, well, let's examine what's written in the Torah. It says first, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzei Sicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mi'beis Avodim. I am Hashem, who has taken you out from the land of Mitzrayim, from the house of bondage. Tell me, Malachim, were you ever in Mitzrayim? Were you ever enslaved in Egypt in a house of bondage? And we know the answer to that. And the Malachim also knew the answer to that. It would seem holy that this Torah is immaterial, does not pertain to you, because you were never in Egypt and you were never enslaved. What else do we read in the Torah? Don't we read in the Torah, Zochar es Yom HaShabbos Akadsho, Sheish Yishamim Tavod V'yasisa Kol Malach Techa? So he says, remember the Shabbos, 6 days of the week you should work, and the seventh day is Shabbos. Tell me, Malachim, which 6 days of the week are you working? What else do we read in the Torah? Kabed es Avicha V'yasimecha, honor thy father and thy mother. Malachim, do you have a father and mother that you should honor? Clearly the Torah is irrelevant for you, the Malachim. Moshe Rabbeinu really held his own. And the Malachim were dumbstruck. You really got us, Moshe Rabbeinu. It's at this point the Medrash says, and actually I gave out some sheets and there's much more, but on the very first source on this sheet, and I could read it, the Medrash says over here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself interjected his own argument in defense of Basar V'Dam, human flesh and blood, receiving the Torah. And the argument Hashem gave to the Malachim is quoted in this source. And it reads as follows. Ein atem ru'uyim l'kablo. You are not worthy, Malachim, to receive the Torah. He's talking to the Malachim, Hashem is saying. Malachim, you're really not worthy. Mankind is more worthy than you. Why? Shemiyat shehatinok bo mi beis ha-sefer. Because the moment a child comes from out of school, mevi'in lo chala v'yochel, the first thing you learn, you can bring the child milk to drink and eat. Mevi'in lo basar v'notel yadav, and then you can bring him fleishigs. He can have meat. He can wash out his hands after the milchigs, and then he can have the fleishigs. He can wash out his mouth. V'atem achaltem basar v'chalav. And Hashem turns and almost like accuses the Malachim. You ate milchigs and fleishigs together, basar v'chalav together. When did the Malachim eat basar v'chalav together? By Avram Avinu. Because what happened? Avram Avinu wined and dined the Malachim. They all came down to visit him. How Avram was doing after the Brit Milah, after the circumcision. And Avram ran out to greet them. And he invited them in. And what does it say there? Vayikach chema v'chalav uven habakar asher asah. He gave them butter, milk, uven habakar, and meat. Now, they certainly weren't abiding by the rules in the Torah by eating basar v'chalav together, were they?
Why would Abraham
only give them? That's an excellent question. And Rabelsky almost asked that question. So you had in mind a question of a great sage. And he says, listen, it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's argument to the Malachim is quite flimsy. First of all, would Avram serve them it together? And second of all, if he did serve it together, we know that they may have done the right thing. They may have washed their mouths out. They may have washed their hands and did everything that was appropriate to do, so they would not eat the basar v'chalav together. Moshe Rabbeinu came up to Shemayim and he offered very, very staunch arguments. But it seems that the arguments of Hashem himself seems to be very weak. And Rabelsky Shlita answers as follows. That's really not the point of this medrash. The point of this medrash is not that he fed them milk and meat, but that Avram Avinu, when he had seen you, the Malachim, coming to visit him, he ran after you. And what did he do at that time? He couldn't wait to host you as guests in his tent, and to treat you royally, and to entertain you, and to feed you, but even more so, to inspire you to a full life of commitment with words of Torah and what have you. So it wasn't just the kashrus. Of course Avram was serving kosher food. He wouldn't serve it otherwise. But it was the whole ambiance and the whole atmosphere that was generated and the whole education that the malachim were being imparted with, which was ever so important. And I think, you know, when you come here today in the world headquarters here to the OU, and we are proud that that you're part of this educational program to become more aware of what's going on outside. But you should know first and foremost that we serve a community, and that kosher is not just food, but kosher is a whole entire world view. It's creating that atmosphere, creating that ambiance, and to raise the knowledge, to raise awareness, but also to inspire. So we hope that that this inspiration should carry on through, and this is just really the tip of the iceberg. There's so much, much more, and I'm honored and privileged to have you here today, to have addressed you, and we wish you much hatzlacha and bracha in all your future endeavors. Thank you. Thank you.